Live across America, this is World Changers. I'm your host, Jamie Osborne. Welcome in across the Biz Talk Radio Network, however you are listening. Welcome to our listeners on iHeartRadio and to our television audience on Biz TV. You know, I was thinking earlier today about mosquitoes. I don't know if you've seen the story or not, but Alphabet, which is Google's parent company, has been driving around. Now, before I tell you what they've been doing, Google does a lot of interesting things. They're not just a search company. We think of Google as being the company where we go to our laptop or our smartphone, we type in a search inquiry, and Google gives it back to us. But I tell you, this is a company that's into all sorts of stuff, everything from self-driving cars to you name it. This one is kind of interesting, though. It's a story out of Fresno, California. So Alphabet, which is Google's parent company, they've been driving around releasing mosquitoes from cars, apparently, in Fresno. 80,000 mosquitoes. So why in the world has a tech company been releasing mosquitoes in Fresno, California? Well, apparently it's part of a project that Google's gotten involved in called the Debug Fresno Project. The Debug Fresno Project, and it's trying to eradicate mosquito-borne diseases. And there are a lot of those. You got West Nile and various other things. So these 80,000 male mosquitoes are infected with a bacteria that is such that when they mate with the female mosquitoes, it's going to make the female mosquitoes infertile, and thereby, so goes the logic, at least in Silicon Valley, thereby eliminating a bunch of the mosquito population and thereby eliminating many mosquito-borne diseases. So think about that the next time you put something into Google. You know, I was thinking about that, though. The mosquito, is there any useful purpose for a mosquito? I asked one of our producers, Jason, that question right before he went on the air. And I said, can you think of any useful purpose for a mosquito? And Jason's a smart guy. He is. He's a smart guy, but he couldn't come up with any. So if Jason couldn't come up with any, I'm assuring all of you out there that there is no useful use for a mosquito. So therefore, go to it, Alphabet. Eliminate those mosquitoes. Start in Fresno and then come to where we are. Data breaches are becoming big news. You have probably heard about the Marriott data breach involving 500 million customers. 500 million customers' data has been breached already, even though the news is barely a week old. Already a class action lawsuit has been filed seeking $12.5 billion in damages. Now, this event with Marriott is the fifth largest data breach recorded so far, I'm aware of. The biggest coming back in 2013, you may remember, when Yahoo went through a data breach which involved 3 billion people. That data breach almost derailed Yahoo's acquisition by Verizon, and it did indeed result in Verizon getting a better price. And then, of course, just in the last few days, Quora. If you're familiar with Quora, the website that's kind of, actually, interestingly enough, kind of an outgrowth of Yahoo's old question and answer sort of service. So Quora came along, they perfected that, but they too announcing to users that they have had a data breach. And I don't know, Jason, I think that maybe we're in an era now where you're falling into one of two camps. Either you're just totally afraid to ever go on the internet at all, or put any sort of information on the internet. You're going to bring back a typewriter, some stone tablets or something like that to communicate. Or maybe you're like me and you just don't care anymore. I mean, we see this stuff in the news, 500 million people, 3 billion people, all this data flying around the dark web somewhere. And I think we just almost have to assume now that our data is being breached and it is out there. I think we've flipped now to that point in our lives where we assume that our data is out there, and it's just a matter, I think, instead of going going from the perspective that we're trying to prevent that. Now what we're trying to do is to prevent the misuse of the data, assuming that it is already out there. Salvation Army, this time of year, of course, there are kettle ringers from sea to shining sea out there in their outfits with their bells in front of retailers and department stores and things like that. And every once in a while, at this time of year, you do read some sort of controversy involving the Salvation Army. Normally, it's involving a retail store that's decided to end its relationship with the Salvation Army in terms of allowing those kettle ringers out there. You might remember the story with Target a few years ago that caused a lot of controversy. Well, now we have a story involving, of all people, the Hell's Angels. Now, who knew that the Hell's Angels like to volunteer ringing bells for the Salvation Army? But apparently they do. This is a story out of Indiana. And it says that the Hell's Angels bikers have been disinvited, if you will, to be bell ringers for the charity. It's due, apparently, to a Facebook post for one of the bikers who had something on his jacket that was apparently construed as a white supremacist marking. Then, of course, I guess somehow it was associated back to the Salvation Army. Salvation Army's PR folks all over that, issuing statements saying that this group doesn't want to be associated with any symbol, marking, or lettering that is viewed as discrimination. Also, the spokesman said clearly the bell ringers in question did not comply with the dress code, and so they will not be allowed to volunteer in the future. And that's where we are today, folks. We've gotten to a time in our culture where social media and the idea of racism and all that has gotten to the point where it can explode in a matter of minutes and get all sorts of collateral damage involved. In this case, it was the Salvation Army. Told we have a caller on the line, and his name is Jeff, and he is from Colorado. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, talking about a few things today. We started off talking about Google getting in the mosquito business. What do you think about that?
I'm honestly not sure about it, to be honest. I mean, don't you think that maybe the mosquitoes play a vital part in the, you know, the ecosystems?
I don't know. We were talking about that. I don't know what useful purpose mosquitoes serve. But you know where we can find out, Jeff?
Google.
Google, that's right. So maybe we can Google. Hey, Google, do mosquitoes serve any useful purpose? So how is the weather where you are today?
It's all right. It's a little nippy.
Yeah, where I am on the East Coast, it's starting to look a little like Christmas. We got some precipitation out there, so you might be seeing some snow here in a little bit. And you know, speaking of Christmas, this whole idea of the Salvation Army and the Hell's Angels, did you hear that just a moment ago?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. I didn't know the Hell's Angels would be allowed to ring the bell in the first place.
Well, apparently they are. Apparently, or at least they were. Do you usually respond to the Salvation Army ringers when you go in stores, or are you only an online? Do they have a virtual version of that? Do you know, Jeff? Can you virtually give to a bell ringer?
I'm not sure. I mean, usually it's just going to a grocery store, just kind of, you know, walking all the way out if you have some spare change.
Yeah. So have you ever given to them? Would it matter to you who was ringing the bell or not?
I mean, it might be a little bit intimidating walking up and seeing a biker gang on the bell, but I mean, if it's for a good cause, maybe I'd still give.
That's an interesting question, though. Does it matter who is ringing the bell? You know, I mean, does it matter if, let's say, a really, really attractive person or a professional person or something like that was ringing the bell versus maybe somebody who might look a little scary or something like that. I wonder if it results in more money in the kettle based upon the person who's ringing the bell. That would be interesting. What do you think?
I think that's very true. Along with,
Do you?
selling anything, an attractive face helps.
Well, there we have it. We'll be back with more World Changers in a moment. And when we come back, we're gonna talk to somebody who's helping thousands of people in need with a company that was featured on Shark Tank. World Changers, Biz Talk Radio. And it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away. I hear the drums echoing tonight. Lots of bright lights out there this time of year. Welcome back. You're listening to World Changers on Biz Talk Radio. Jamie Osborne here. Our next guest knows a thing or two about lights. Her name is Andrea Sureshta, and she is co-founder of a company called Luminade. And we welcome you to the show, Andrea.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I understand that this company started back in the day after an earthquake hit Haiti, and you were looking for a way to help. Is that right?
Yes. So my co-founder, Anna, and I were actually students, graduate students, in design and architecture school. And like everyone else who might recall at the time, we were watching the news, reading the newspaper, and learning about all these things that these people who had just experienced this terrible disaster had to endure. And then we're just thinking along the lines of, as designers, like, are there things we could do or design that could help?
So you were at the University of Chicago in grad school, is that right?
Oh, I ended up going to the University of Chicago for my MBA, but at this time I was at Columbia University, and this was architecture.
Got it. So let's walk through exactly what Luminade does. So this event happens in Haiti. You're wanting to use design skills to find a way to aid in relief efforts. And out of that, exactly what did you do, and how did it turn into a company?
Well, I wouldn't say it happened right away by any means. So you mentioned we were students, design students, no less. So we didn't really totally wrap our minds around, what is like business, what is entrepreneurship, what is even social entrepreneurship, even though we knew we had an idea that was like something rooted in something that could help people, essentially. I think the first thing we probably did was just prototype our ideas, and which was what we knew best, basically, as designers. And once we kind of had versions of it that seemed like they could work, we then just asked the question, like, do we think that they could help people in these tough situations where you need alternatives to things like kerosene lanterns and candles? Solar seemed like it was a really good solution for that because, all you need is the sun. You don't need any additional batteries other than the one that recharges. And a place like Haiti actually did have a lot of sun, but not a very established electricity grid. And so the next thing we kind of thought through was, when a disaster happens, what happens after that and how does stuff get distributed on the ground? And we realized that we needed to work with aid organizations to kind of unlock that distribution network. And so we've kind of worked backwards step by step to think through how our lights could then get on the ground, and started a business in the process.
So one of the interesting things here is, you're looking around for a way to help, and you're thinking about, the most basic human needs. You're thinking about food and water and shelter and light. Light was a need that you discovered. You had people out living in these, tent cities and that sort of thing. And and you came up with a product. And so, as I understand it, it's basically an inflatable solar lantern. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, correct. So the basic components are there's a solar panel, small solar panel, a rechargeable lithium-ion battery, and then a set of LED, high-performance LED lights. And then that it makes the basic circuit, and then that circuit is laminated into what we call an inflatable core. So you literally blow it up like a beach ball, and when you turn it on, the inflatable kind of cover around it diffuses light like a lantern. But then when it's not turned on, where you're just charging it or transporting it or shipping it, you can collapse them and deflate them, and they just pack like super flat. So they take up far less space for things like transportation than a conventional lantern or flashlight.
So a lot of organizations,
they float.
A lot of organizations that get involved in, you know, relief efforts and things like that, you know, getting the product from point A to point B is half the battle, whether it's in a shipping container or what have you. So obviously that was a part of your design here. But how do you deploy them?
Well, we ourselves, I mean, over time, I could say the last 5+ years have gotten pretty knowledgeable about global distribution and methods of shipping things from A to B and sort of how that works, especially in certain places that are traditionally harder to reach and or maybe like harder to reach because they've just experienced some sort of disaster event. And however, that's just, I mean, there's a point at which like our knowledge ends and then really the work begins for all of our partners and customers who are disaster relief aid organizations. So what I have to say is they actually do a lot of the heavy lifting, and it's very difficult work. So one thing we've learned is just that's a very, it's a really tough job to be a humanitarian aid organization, especially after disaster.
Are there any in particular that you're working, Are you working with World Vision, or what are some of the ones you work with? Red Cross?
Yeah, we work with similar organizations. Yes, we don't work with Red Cross. One of our longer-term sort of partners and customers over time is an organization called Shelterbox, and they're based in the UK, but they specialize in post-disaster and conflict work, and they actually distribute sort of the supplies that come to mind that you would commonly need after a disaster, including, like, they have a box that has, like, tents and cookware, and they have several other sort of kits that they distribute. But it's just like basic items that people would need to get on their feet, get back on their feet after a disaster. And then they include solar lights as well. And they've distributed Luminade in more than, I guess it's probably like 15 countries by now, to disaster relief aid responses. So they have a very large footprint, even if they're not one of the biggest organizations.
What's the price point for the product?
We actually have a range of products now. They retail from between $25 all the way up to $70. And the highest, the most, like, the more costly versions of our product both charge phones. So they're both sort of a high-performance lantern. And then you can also charge phones with them. And in terms of, though, how the pricing works when we might work with other like NGOs and organizations, we have a lot of sort of discount pricing available.
Sure.
Where a lot of those organizations are moving products in very large volumes, so the pricing is very different than if you were on like luminate.com.
So Andrea, we've got a little less than a minute here, but if this product sounds familiar to you, it's because you may have seen it on a show called Shark Tank. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was we're very lucky to have managed to get ourselves on Shark Tank, and we ended up making a deal with Mark Cuban, who's been a great partner and investor for us, and he actually is very interested and cares a lot about what we do to work with organizations after disasters. And I mean, it's great to have a partner that cares both about the business but also about the social mission.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Andrea Sureshta, the company is called Luminade. When we come up, we have a company that's alerted millions about incoming missile attacks. World Changers on BizTalk Radio.
I took my love and I took it down.
Welcome back to World Changers on Biz Talk Radio. I'm Jamie Osborne. Our next guest served as a diplomat for the Department of State for 3 years in a pretty dangerous place right now in the world, Syria. His name is John Yeager. He is the founder and CEO of a company called Hala Systems. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So Hala Systems is a social enterprise focused on developing effective technology-driven solutions to the world's toughest humanitarian challenges. And so let's start in Syria. You were obviously in the Foreign Service, I'm guessing. Is that right?
I was not, actually. I was brought aboard as what they call a subject matter expert to assist in a number of different ways on the programming of the non-lethal, non-humanitarian programming that the U.S. government was doing in the Syrian conflict.
So for the benefit of our listeners, bring us up to date on what's going on in Syria now. There was, of course, a refugee issue and a lot of things going on. But, you know, from your perspective, give us the best 30 seconds you can and paint a picture for us of what life is like in Syria right now.
It's pretty tough. It's tough to do in 30 seconds, and it's also pretty tough to live in Syria right now. I think that there have been some positive movements towards a fragile peace. There is a ceasefire currently in the non-government held areas surrounding Idlib. But there are still 3 million people, roughly, estimated 3 million people living in those areas. And they are very much sort of ungoverned. And they are definitely a risk to their neighbors to the north, Turkey, who's taken in millions of refugees already from Syria and isn't super inclined to take any more. And so there's sort of a bit of a stalemate that many are hoping turns into some sort of lasting peace, but it's still very much a place at risk of imminent and massive humanitarian crisis.
So when you left Syria, you create this company called Hala Systems. Your first product, as I understand it, is a warning system for airstrikes or missile strikes that actually lives in a smartphone app. Is that right?
That's close. That's mostly right. There's definitely a smartphone app element to it. It is essentially a system that was designed to give civilians advanced warning before an airstrike might occur so that they could take self-protective measures. And it's a sort of took it from the history books. It was something called the Royal Observer Corps in the UK, and the U.S. had its own version of this, in which civilians were trained and operated as a spotter network for incoming aircraft. It was actually operational in the U.S., I think, all the way through the Korean War, in which civilian spotters would actually phone in observations of a threatening aircraft. You had engineers that would then plot that out, do a little math, and try to predict where those aircraft might be going, and use that to activate indication and warning systems, such as air raid sirens. We simply drag that about 7 to 8 decades into the future, and started applying more modern technologies to it, but it's essentially the same. Civilian spotters use a smartphone app to input observations of threatening aircraft. We're able to then collect that structured data, apply some analysis to it in real time, and make a determination about where and when we think that aircraft might be going to deliver some sort of kinetic effect. We then use that determination to create a warning for the civilians in those areas, and we send that warning out via as many different methods as we can so that as many civilians as possible can take self-protective action.
And I understand you've had some results here. From what I read here, this technology has been able to reduce the lethal nature of airstrikes by 20 to 30% in some cases. Is that right?
That is our belief. It is taken with a caveat that it's very difficult to get very, very good quantitative information out of an active war zone. But we were able to analyze the lethality of airstrikes in places before and after our system was installed, controlling for things such as the cadence of the violence. And we were able to realize a 20 to 30% reduction in lethality. That translates to, you know, roughly one out of every four people that would have been killed survived. We actually think 20 to 30% is a floor, not a ceiling. We think that number can actually go upwards of 50 to 60% with certain improvements to the system.
So talk to me about the business side here in terms of how you're structured and how you monetize this particular enterprise.
That's a great question. there's two answers to that question. One is that we're using technology to achieve a humane or humanitarian effect. There are Western governments that are willing to fund that sort of work. And so a significant portion, if not all, of our revenue currently comes from those government customers. In the process of actually achieving that effect of, developing this technology, we've actually created a very interesting tool set of various things, such as the app development, but also the hardware development that went into some of the sensors, as well as some of the algorithmic work that we've done across the board. We think these tools have broad applicability to solving different sorts of problems than what we're using them for today. So the plan, sort of long-term, mid to long-term, for HALA is to find the commercial viability of the application of some of those tools. At the same time, we actually think that there's a tremendous amount of social impact that we can have, not just in Syria, but in lots of different places. One of the numbers that I like to quote is that it's estimated that over 2 billion people worldwide live in places that whose development outcomes are profoundly affected by violence. It's a huge market, for lack of a more artful term, that we think we really would like to work towards having an impact for.
So I assume this particular product it sounds like a beginning, not an end in and of itself. Are there other things in the pipeline that you anticipate taking to market, you know, in the next 1 to 2 years?
I think that we are, for the near term, going to focus on the places of most acute need, where they overlap with places that are receiving attention. To be perfectly candid about it, the world has to care and has to be able to direct money and resources at solving problems in order for us to be involved. Fortunately, that is happening in a lot of different places, and there are lots of countries and lots of fairly large economies backing some of this humanitarian work, and so our focus is going to be on places of active conflict, because that's where we think the technology set that we've developed has the most specific and near-term capability to have a real impact.
So you call yourself a social enterprise. What does that mean to you exactly? I mean, how do you define that term? It's thrown around a lot these days.
Sure. And I think the full phrase is a for-profit social enterprise, so that people don't get confused. That we're running an NGO. For us, a for-profit social enterprise is an organization that has a double bottom line, right? The first bottom line is the one everybody knows about, which is you have to make enough money to sustain yourself. The second bottom line for us, though, is to have some sort of effect that achieves a social good. In the case of our work in Syria, that social good is the prevention of death, casualties, and trauma for civilians in the toughest place on the planet. In other circumstances, that social good might change, but it's a very underpinning quality of our company, and it's what we spend almost all of our time actually working on. And frankly, it's the reason that so many really talented people have decided to join us. They're all unified in this desire to have a more mission-oriented career.
Well, the company is called Holla Systems. You can find them online, hollasystems.com, a company doing well by doing good. Thank you to John Yeager. You're listening to World Changers on Biz Talk Radio. We'll be right back. Back for our final segment today, World Changers on Biz Talk Radio. I'm Jamie Osborne. You know, companies do good in the world for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's simply for doing good in the world. Sometimes it's to make a profit. Sometimes it's simply good business and good PR to do that. One company that has been out to help in the world is BP. They have the BP Foundation, and they've gotten involved a lot in disaster relief after Hurricane Harvey. They joined with company employees, donated nearly $1.6 million and 200,000 gallons of fuel to help Houston recover. One state where recovery has been going on is California. I believe that the wildfires are out there now. We have a caller on the line, Brian from California. Brian, how are you today?
Hi. Hey, fine, Jamie. Thanks.
So I'm just kind of curious. There's been a lot in the news about your state and about the recovery from these wildfires. What kind of relief efforts have you seen coming into California? How have people where you are, and you're south of there, but how have people where you are been getting involved in relief efforts?
That's interesting. I was just reading up on something last night about Sierra Nevada Brewing up in Chico, California, had started a particular recipe of a beer that they put out, and all the proceeds from the sale of that beer was to go towards fire relief for the Camp Fire up in Northern California. And what they did is they put that recipe out for every brewery across the United States to tackle, and they suggested all the suppliers for those, for the ingredients, the malt, the hops, the barley, all donate, and then that the proceeds when they sell these at the breweries go towards fire relief, helping out in the community of Paradise area. So I think hundreds, if not thousands, of breweries, small craft breweries across the United States have jumped in and are making this beer and selling it with all proceeds going up to the campfire.
So it's like an open source beer then, right?
Exactly. It's an open source recipe, not something specific or secret to the brewery.
Is it something you'll buy?
Oh, for sure. Very interested. It'd be interesting kind of getting all the slight variations from the different breweries across the United States.
That's great. Well, Brian from California, thanks for calling in today. We were talking earlier about Alphabet, which is Google's parent company. If you weren't with us at the beginning of the show, we were talking about what they're doing out in Fresno, California, to help with a project to eradicate mosquito-borne diseases. They're also involved in a project to try to bring the internet to underserved places in the world. And the way this is working, as I understand it, is through launching a series of balloons. These balloons go up to the edge of space and then are able to beam wireless internet signals down from there. They call it Project Loon, I think. And so they're also able to do that in a short-term basis for for disaster relief, particularly after hurricanes like Maria. Another caller on the line, Jerry from Maryland. How are you, Jerry?
Hey, I'm good, thanks.
Great. So, says here, you are a former air traffic controller. You've been obviously involved in aerospace. What do you think about what Alphabet's doing?
In terms of what?
Well, in terms of the idea of using these balloons on the edge of space to try to serve internet signals.
Well, clearly they have a motivation where they want to help people. And they had an idea that if they did that and they provide internet to people that don't currently have the internet, it's going to be a game changer. It's life changing. We know what the internet has done for society. They're going to expand that. So I think it's fabulous what they're doing.
So are we, based upon your background, do you see any particular hazards with that? I mean, they're not actually, you know, in space. It's just at the edge of space. If we start launching tons of balloons up there, you have any concern about that?
No, not really, because they'll fly at an altitude where they're not going to mess with any of the current commercial air traffic. When they launched air traffic control, whether it's here or in other countries, will make sure they keep commercial traffic away from it, and they'll get to do their thing without interfering with any air traffic.
Of course, Google has a profit motivation for this. Facebook has been involved in similar sorts of efforts in India and other places. The more, as you reach market saturation in the developed world, the only way you grow as a company is by developing user bases in places that aren't able to use your services. But clearly here, Alphabet is trying to do good, trying to bring connectivity to remote places. As a consumer of technology products and sort of thing, does that make you any more likely to buy a Google product or service or not?
Well, me personally, I think the answer would be yes. And as I look at American business in general, there's other companies where they fill a niche of helping people. Some well-known examples, some aren't so well-known. Well-known examples would be like Salvation Army, American Red Cross. They exist because of the need to help people. There's other companies not so well-known. There's a company called Resolve that most people haven't heard of. They're the National Infertility Association, but they do lobbying. They have advocacy and outreach support groups, work with the medical professionals and pharmaceuticals. Their whole goal is to help people with infertility issues. Just this past year, they had some success in Delaware. For the first time in this country, a state mandated that employers provide medical coverage for infertility issues. I'm also kind of a history guy, and when you look at historically, other companies, and Ford Motor Company is a great example. Here, Henry Ford had this product that he knew was a game changer. Was called the Model T, and he could change people's lives. Yes, he got rich in the process, but I think his motivation was he wanted to make an impact to society, and he certainly did.
So companies doing well by doing good. Jerry from Maryland, thank you for being with us, and thank all of you for being with us this week on World Changers here on Biz Talk Radio. I'm Jamie Osborne, and we'll be back next week.